note the presence of a quorum. First item is approval of the minutes of the members' meeting held on September 27th, 2023. Do I have a motion?
I move.
Second?
I second.
Yeah, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Okay, Kathy, you'll lead us through the agenda items.
Thanks, Harry. Before I start, I'd like to welcome Mark Norman to the Audit Committee. We look forward to working with you. Hopefully I get to meet you in person next time. So we have our usual agenda. Mary John will walk us through the third quarter financial report. All things are looking great, thank goodness. Ellen will present the debt and investment report. Mary Hahn will present the report on credit risk and the internal audit report. Ernst & Young is back. Welcome back, guys, to present their audit plan for the upcoming audit. And then I will be presenting the purchasing guidelines for your approval for this year. And that's our agenda.
Thank you. Okay, first item is the presentation by Mary John of the third quarter financial report.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everyone. The third quarter of fiscal year 2023 covers the period from November 1, 2022 through July 31st, 2023. As of the end of the third quarter, revenues exceeded expenses by $355.2 million, compared with the same period in fiscal year 2022, when net income was $75.1 million. The increase was largely due to improvements in the corporation's fair market value on investment securities and was recorded as an unrealized gain. Operating revenues for this period were $559.8 million, compared to $520.3 million during the same period last year. Mortgage interest earnings increased by $58.5 million, or 13.9% from a year ago. Non-operating revenues, which mainly consist of investment earnings, saw a significant increase, largely due to the aforementioned increase in the fair market value. Realized investment earnings increased by $41.3 million from a year ago. Operating expenses were $336.5 million, an increase of $53.5 million, primarily due to a $58.4 million increase in bond interest expense. Total assets were $24.1 billion, an increase of $2.5 billion, or 11.6% from fiscal year end 2022. This increase was mainly due to the corporation's ongoing lending activities, as mortgage loan advances were $2.5 billion for the period. The mortgage portfolio, net of conduit loans, was $19.2 billion and comprised of 79.7% of total assets and is performing relatively well. Total liabilities were $20 billion, an increase of $2.1 billion, or 12% from fiscal year end 2022. Bonds and debt obligations increased by a net of $1 billion. New issuances were at $1.7 billion, while principal repayments were at $672 million. Net position at the end of the third quarter was $4 billion, up $355.2 million from a year ago. This concludes my remarks. Any questions?
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Murray.
Thank you.
Next item is the debt report by Ellen Duffy.
Thank you. Yeah. The corporation's debt report is as of August 31st, 2023. This is the same report that was presented at the audit meeting on September 27th, as a September 30th report was not available, but I thought it'd be helpful for you, Mark, since it's your first meeting, so you get an idea of our format.
Thanks. Mm-hmm. Sorry, everybody else.
Okay. Since April 30th, the corporation issued three series of open resolution bonds in the amount of $642.7 million and remarketed one series of bonds, of $53.6 million open resolution bonds. In addition, the corporation issued two series of bonds in the housing impact resolution in the amount of $320.3 million. There are bond redemptions in three series of open resolution bonds in the amount of $201.9 million and one standalone series of bonds in the amount of $8.3 million. Please see the footnote on the interest rate hedges page that indicates that the SOFR base rates that have been used as of July 31st, 2023 to calculate swap payments, the LIBOR rates are no longer published as of June 30th, so we're no longer pricing our swaps based on LIBOR. We had signed onto the the ISDA protocol that these automatically changed on July 1st. The corporation's debt outstanding as of August 31st, 2023 is approximately $15.6 billion, and the corporation's statutory debt capacity stands at $18 billion. And an increase is waiting on the governor's desk to be signed. The increase would be to $19 billion, but we have not gotten word that that's been signed yet. Any questions?
Can you just elaborate a little bit on the interest rate hedge?
Sure. So we have a page in the debt report, the second page of the actual report. We have the interest rate hedges listed. It's very small.
Yeah.
And so when we entered into a lot of these hedges, they were based on LIBOR, which was the convention to use to price swaps. But LIBOR, there were some scandals in how it was set, and they decided to sunset it as of June 30th of this year. Yet we've known about this for a couple of years. For the last couple of years, we've been pricing swaps based on SOFR, which is the secured overnight funds rate, which is it's really an overnight rate that, you know, there are some term SOFRs. But there's an adjustment factor. So when we converted our rates from LIBOR to SOFR, when we use 3-month LIBOR, it's like a 26.1% adjustment to whatever rate we're getting. And so the LIBOR rate plus spreads are not SOFR, plus this 26.1 basis points, plus the spread that we had. And if it's based on 1-month LIBOR, it is it's 13% that is the difference. But so these were set by the International Derivatives Association, and we signed on to this protocol so that everything just converted. We didn't renegotiate our swap, but we can renegotiate our swaps. And from time to time, we do review them. And we have done that in the past where we've gotten better rates, where we extend or we sell a call, you know, based on the markets. We work closely with our hedge advisor, Mahanta Garzullo, to do that.
Yeah. My understanding, there is no more LIBOR.
No more LIBOR, right. Yeah. Bloomberg still publishes it, but it's sort of some sort of average. I'm not really quite sure how they publish it, but it's no longer exists. So we do use SOFR. And now all taxable is usually based on SOFR, some sort of percent SOFR.
So overall, has it increased the pricing overall?
SOFR is high. It's about a 5.30 rate right now. LIBOR is high too. But it is based on where it was. LIBOR is higher than SOFR, so it was the differential that was in June of 21, I want to say, they said this is what the spread will be based on this. So it wasn't done as an average, and that's what they've, and it's supposed to be what an average spread is. That spread can vary. So depending on what's going on in the market, it's supposed to be about where it should trade, but sometimes it's a lot narrower and sometimes it's higher. So it's sort of equivalent. It's supposed to be an equivalent yield. But SOFR moves really not daily moves as the Fed changes rates. It just doesn't move as quickly as LIBOR did. So what we see now, and this could all change. It's sort of a new index we're using. So,
right. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Next item, Ellen, is the investment report.
Okay, thank you. The corporation's investment report is as of September 18th, 2023, and our funds under management total approximately $5.7 billion. And this report reflects routine investment activity. Any questions?
Okay.
Thank you.
There being none, next item is a report on the credit risks of Mary Helen.
Thank you. So the report before you is dated as of September 30, 2023, and the previous report to the audit committee was dated August 31st, 2023. There were not many changes, no new rating agency actions of note, and there were no new approved counterparties. HGC's counterparty exposure remains diversified, with the largest exposures continuing to be with Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and Wells Fargo. The Wells Fargo exposure is primarily in the form of construction letters of credit covering 25 projects and 4 interest rate hedges. Investments rated AA or higher were 51% of total investments, unchanged since the last report, while investments rated BBB or not rated were 35% of total investments versus 36% at the last report. And these investments are all fully collateralized by high quality U.S. Treasury or agency securities and or Federal Home Loan Bank letters of credit. HCC exposure to liquidity and swap providers was also unchanged since the last report. Any questions?
There being none, the next item is the internal audit report. Mary?
Thank you. Since the last report to the audit committee on September 27th, one internal audit project was completed, and that was the portfolio management assurance audit. Here, our objectives were to determine how distressed projects are managed within the three main asset management divisions, engineering and architecture, portfolio analysis, and preservation programs, to assess controls and compliance with asset management policies and procedures, and to assess the system for managing HDC's portfolio of properties across all three divisions. Upon completion of the audit, we noted no matters involving internal controls that we considered material weaknesses. Opportunities exist to enhance current operations, including formalizing training procedures for portfolio analysts, formalizing coordination on projects in distress, strengthening capacity through additional hiring, and centralizing all aspects of project data. Management agrees with these opportunities for enhancement and has already taken steps to address them. That concludes my report. Are there any questions?
I imagine that the distress is not necessarily laid out here, but have the number of projects in distress increased over the last?
That's not something we have assessed because we were just looking at controls and how things work. I'll let Eric talk to that point.
That's a question that would be more in our asset management portfolio, and it's something that it's a good question because we're tracking it very carefully right now. We're in an era where that has been a central concern that everyone has been monitoring, and we have as well. We could probably, we don't need to do it here, but we'd be happy to talk to you or any board member more about where that stands. We're happy to say that it looks like there may have been an inflection point on some of the data that we've been tracking. It looks like the systems are starting to work and things are leveling out. I don't want to overstate that or go into too much detail, but be happy to talk about it more.
Okay.
And this audit was really prompted by that concern. And so we can take a look at all areas where our distress projects are being managed and making sure that we're doing whatever we can to manage the portfolio.
The other thing, and I appreciate your thoughtfulness about this too, we are in an era when we're going to make more investments in the direction of kind of tracking through data and analytics that world, but also, and you'll see more of this as your time on the board, we're doing a lot more work with the New York City Housing Authority as well. And one of the central roles in that work is to kind of monitor that portfolio, including the debt side of it, but also the real estate side of it as well, what the needs are. And so we're making investments in that direction to be able to have that data and pay more attention to it.
Okay.
And the appointment of Brian Che in the earlier meeting is one of those investments because he would be managing that portfolio directly and then working with the asset management team and the portfolio management and the engineers on the overall general portfolio.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Next item is the Ernst & Young audit plan for fiscal year 2023.
Excellent. Thank you, everybody, for having us today at your meeting. Appreciate the time on the agenda. My name is Danielle Hurlbert. I'm one of the executives that leads the EY audit team and will again for this year's audit. With me also is Lou Roberts. And so both of us help assist and lead the audit team. And so happy to be here again to give our audit plan. As Kathy mentioned at the beginning of the meeting, we were just reappointed as your auditor at the last meeting. So really just getting our procedures kicked off with Kathy and her team and really teams in many departments throughout the organization. And so we'll take a couple minutes to maybe just walk you through our materials that were included. I'll start maybe on our executive summary, which is page 1 of the materials. if you're following along. Really just an outline there on our timing and some of our initial work. Like I said, really just working with Kathy and her team to co-develop our exact timeline to perform our audit procedures and possibly perform some of our procedures on site this year. Really, I think we envision doing a hybrid model this year where we've really been fully remote over the last few years. So I think working in a hybrid environment really can help benefit both teams. And so the plan that we our attendant sort of plan of action as we start the audit this year. And so just maybe a little reminder on a timeline of our audit procedures on the right hand side there. So as I said, this month we will align and really start some of our internal procedures as part of getting ready to perform the fiscal year 2023 audit and then really plan to be full swing with our audit procedures for year end once the agency closes the books. After the year end of October 31st. And so really then be full swing with our audit procedures in December and January. And then I believe our plan is to come back to your meeting in January as we typically do to present our audit results. And so our audit results and our deliverables that we are auditing is consistent with prior years. And so if you turn to the next page, just a reminder on our 2023 audit services, which will include again an audit of the financial statements of the corporation for fiscal 2023. In addition to that, also an audit of grant programs that have federal funding. So what we call a uniform guidance grant compliance audit. So again, intend to do that audit in conjunction with the year-end financial statement audit, as well as procedures under the minimum servicing requirements, sometimes what we call the USAP procedures. So really those three deliverables that are consistent with prior years, and that, like I said, we intend to report on our audit results at your January meeting. And so we'll report more on our findings at that time. Then the next couple pages, beginning on page 3, I won't go through all of these lines in detail, but just want to point out that there is a section on what we call our areas of emphasis. This is really the financial statement amounts that have the most, that are the most material in nature or that involve some estimation by management. So really can have different factors that are working into why they are considered an area of emphasis. So both significance and subjectivity, which we tried to show in sort of those two different columns. And then finally on the right hand side of that page, and then continuing for a few pages on all the items that are noted in those areas, just a brief summary on our audit procedures that we intend to execute on. What I will say is really those intended audit procedures are consistent with the prior year. Although we do go through a reassessment and a risk assessment process as part of our audit process each year, really at the end of the day, typically the financial statement amounts and these areas of emphasis tend to be consistent year over year, as we would expect, since there are, you know, really significant fluctuations in the operations of the corporation. So I would say overall, really, the areas of emphasis are consistent with prior year. The intended procedures are consistent. And as part of our audit results in January, we'll really go through the details of our audit procedures that we have conducted at that point and the summary results in a little more detail. And then otherwise, just wanted to touch on the fact that there's a few appendices that are included in the materials. I wasn't going to flip through those specific pages, but just wanted to call out that there's a couple items there, as we always tend to include what's called our required communications. So just from an auditing standard, just some items that we are required to put in writing to the committee members, but really nothing to call out, no concern in those communications at this point in the audit process. And then a couple other things just to note, we tend to include just some accounting pronouncements that are coming in the future. And so a little brief background in each of those that are out there. But as we tend to do with the audit results, for any accounting pronouncements that are adopted by the corporation, we'll report on those in more detail as part of our audit results in January. And a couple of the things that were included in the appendices just around some risk management and really quality control procedures of our firm. And just want to call out to the committee that since our last meeting of our audit results last year, the firm goes through every 3 years, we go through an audit process, let's say an audit of our audits. And so it's called a peer review. And so our firm did go through that peer review process again. We got our most recent results in May of this year, which is a pass rating, and it's a pass-fail system. So just want to point that out also to the committee members. I think that was all I was going to touch on in detail and comment on, but happy to answer any questions if there are any.
Any question?
No questions.
Okay, thank you. Is there any other business?
We have the procurement guidelines.
Number 10.
All the way to number 10. Sorry. Yeah. We need approval of HCC's purchasing guidelines, Kathy.
Thank you, Harry. Pursuant to the Public Authorities Accountability Act of 2005, HCC is required to have its members annually review and approve the procurement guidelines of the corporation. After approval, the guidelines are submitted to the Office of the State Comptroller through its Public Authorities Reporting Information System, otherwise known as PARIS. The guidelines are also published on the corporation's website. This year, senior staff is recommending a change to the guidelines to increase the aggregate total dollar amount required for a competitive bidding process for goods and services from $5,000 to $10,000 for the IT and office services departments who are routinely involved in procurement. The last time changes were made to the threshold for competitive bids was January of 2015. This change is reflective of the increase in the cost of goods and services over that time frame, coupled with rising inflation over the past couple of years. With this change, the corporation is still below the dollar threshold used by the city for procurement. Other changes to the guidelines are related to changes of titles and staff within HDC. If there are no questions, the members are being asked to approve the corporation's updated procurement guidelines.
Do I have any questions?
I move.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? There being none, the motion carries. And now we go to any other business.
I just have a question. And I asked Adolfo, but I know that he's living it. But I'm wondering how much the migrant situation, I'll call it, is impacting HDC.
It's impacting significantly the entire city. We are a little bit less in the line of fire, but not entirely, because it is all hands on deck. But the ways that we're experiencing it are more through our ability to quickly and more efficiently fill any kind of vacant unit that may be available on our waiting list in order to create more space in the shelter system overall. So we're trying to kind of reduce frictional vacancy across the board. Trying to reduce the kind of frictional vacancy across the board to make sure that there's just any unit that's available is available as quickly as possible. So for us, that's meant things like looking at all of our systems to make sure that we can move the lottery process or the lease up process as quickly as possible and try and move things that way. And we've also been working hard. This is something that, and it's in the housing plan, you know, when we talked about the supply stuff earlier, if you just reduce the frictional vacancy by half, say there's 1,000 units that for whatever reason is vacant, you reduce it by half, that alone is worth doing. But in this context, and important to do, and we're working on that, but in this context, it's that much more important because the demand side is just so great. So it's real.
Do you see more families or individuals? I can't tell from TV.
It's really hard to, we have a whole set of data tracking that we go through and City Hall is engaged. So we're in a couple meetings weekly. It's a broad mix. There are a lot of families, but there are also a lot of individuals. So I actually don't know off the top of my head what that ratio is, but it is a very broad set of folks. And it's a little hard to predict because as you've read, the supply is not organic necessarily. It's not just folks showing up. They're people who are being like directed to New York City as well. So that kind of changes the composition a little bit. But there are folks who have that information.
And the city's also looking at a lot of ways in which the process of getting rental subsidy flowing to people coming out of the shelter system for that subsidy to come quicker so that they can actually move into units that are, you know, in our portfolio. And then hopefully that can create some more room in the shelter. So that's where the city is. And, you know, some of our folks and then some of the folks in at HPD are heavily involved in like how you can streamline some of that. And the administration also has been doing a lot of how can you remove some of the obstacles and streamlining the kind of information that's required as part of when people apply for different kinds of rental subsidies. So that's all part of a bigger, you know, group of like agenda items that are hoping that we're hoping can help.
I would just say too, because I think it's important that we think that the cultural conversation around this is important. Like people tend to forget that between 1845 and 1855, over 900,000 Irish people came to the United States and were settled. And there have been waves of immigration through settlement housing, and New York has been historically very successful at doing that. So while this is a tension and this is a lot of pressure and this is unique, it's not a situation that New York hasn't been through before. And it's kind of important to manage that, that communication as well. The kind of, we're in an era of that kind of know nothing vibe that took over, you know, the kind of, you can get to an anti-immigrant kind of point. And we think it's also important to make sure that people understand that this is something that has to be managed and dealt with, but it's something that New York has experience with, and that, you know, there are unique elements to this because it's a different time and a different era, but there are strands of it that are familiar. So we're all working hard, and the city is as focused as I've ever seen a city government focused on a topic. And we've been through a lot. When you think about COVID, when you think about 9/11, this administration is focused on this issue because it's a central issue for the city.
Out in the neighborhoods, you can see, I can't attribute it to migrant families, but you can see a tick up of folks on the street.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's hard to tell because that could tick up anyway, right? Could be, you know, pre this. So you don't really know where it's coming from, but a lot more folk that are clearly living on the street in residential neighborhoods.
That census stuff that you describe, which is sometimes like the overnight census that happen, they are being skewed right now. It's really hard to get as much data as you might want on that information. Yeah. We just saw some information too, when you think about it too, at the humanitarian level, like the number of kids who go to school from shelter, right, is a shocking number when you hear about that. So, yeah.
Thank you.
There questions, items?
I mean, I did have an interest rate question, but I'm coming a little late to the
feel free
table. It didn't seem like it had an effect on the numbers when I looked at them, but, and you know, I think we've come pretty far pretty fast, but now we're kind of level. But I'm just wondering if that the current interest rate environment is affecting the number of deals you're seeing, either because of the other debt, you know, the cost of capital increasing for, you know, other pieces of the debt, or certainly the current SOFR rates.
It's done. I'll take it the big picture and then others can dive in or whatever, but absolutely had significant impacts, and HPD has been working through term sheet issues and subsidy gap issues. The same thing true with the public housing side of it as well. It's made our public housing work and the preservation work more difficult. You'll also see it when we talk about some of our financials. We had some numbers that were losses related to mark to market. You're holding to maturity, so it doesn't mean that much, but it's still it gets your attention. So it definitely has had significant impacts, and we've been able to work through deals so far. We had some wins recently on the policy side. We set the 4% tax credit to 4%, and so that actually raised the amount of equity that was coming into deals, which was incredibly helpful. That has been reduced significantly by the interest rate problem. So it was like a big win on one side, but a lot of it has been taken back by the interest rate problem. So we haven't actually, you know, we get to as many deals as we can in our pipeline, but we're definitely feeling it, and you'll see it in some of the future presentations of individual projects. I don't know, Ellen or others, you want to say?
Yeah, so what we did too is we set our rates according to market. I mean, we're getting ready now to set rates for December, which is hard to do in this market. As you know, it's been like a whipsaw the last week, particularly. But we work with the bankers and do projections, put a cushion on. But there are some times that we do take less spread. We know that when there's gaps, as rates go up, yes, it's be more city subsidy, more, you know, the money just doesn't go as far. We try to look at different structures, particularly preservation. There's some money. We did issue a lot of taxable bonds while rates were low. Taxable doesn't have as many rules as tax exempt. So we're able to use that, and we're blending it with current market money to make up fast for preservation. They tend to be very tight, those deals. So we do have good access to the market. We've been issuing variable rate bonds, especially for the longer term, and then swapping it, because the synthetic market is better than the fixed rate market. But, you know, that's risk too. So we have very good counterparties. We have very good terms with our ISDAs. But we do watch that. We're watching, you know, that we're managing our risk and spreading in the counterparties we work with. We're trying to diversify that. So it's a little bit of everything that we do to try and keep the rates down. But the last several cycles, we've used variable rate at the long end. It's very hard to sell 40-year bonds, but it makes a deal more affordable. We can amortize over 40 years, but we're putting the variable rate in the longer end because we can call that at any time, really. And our swap, our portfolio is set up with the variable rate that we manage our swaps as a portfolio. Versus having, if we enter into one swap, it's set for this deal. We can move it around. So if a bond amount is reduced due to a lot of prepayments, move it. But if it's good money, we take those prepayments for taxable deals and relend it. So we try and do that as much as possible, that we're trying to, you know, recycle some of the sold money on the taxable side and tax exempt as best we can. So we capital markets. It's not so busy. Working very closely with legal, and I'll make sure we can do this and development that it fits in our programmatic.
Yeah, the variable on the long end is interesting.
I didn't even miss. Yeah, it's you know, we swap it and you can redeem it at any time, basically. So you know, and but that's changing now. The yield curve is changing. So the yield curve is so far negatively sloped. The longer you went out, the lower the swap rate. But which is sounds good. Now it's more flat right now. So we're figuring out how to structure the swap that we talk about at the board meeting right now. Like the best tenor to do it.
So. Anything else? Okay. There being no other business, I would like to call for a motion to adjourn.
I know.
Second. Sure. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? There being none, the motion carries. The meeting is adjourned.